Good morning still. Good morning. Glad to have you all here with us today for the Feast of Tabernacles. Thank you very much for that special music. It is amazing how quickly a group of people can come together and sound so good. Just so good. So we really appreciate that. This will be the 44th time that my wife and I have kept the feast. We'd love to go to Hawaii, as might have been mentioned. You might notice my tie today. I figure if you have to wear a tie, it might as well be a Tommy Bahama Hawaiian tie. It matches the flowers, but don't touch it. I appreciate that. Well, we're very happy to be here in Oceanside as our home area in the San Diego Church. We've been in the San Diego congregation for a number of years, and part of that I'm going to tell you about today. We came into the church in 1973, so quite a little time that we've been here, and hopefully share some stories with you today. We do have a PowerPoint, as best as we've come up with it. It looks like it's coming in a little better than we had hoped to start with. Mr. Weber mentioned that a picture's worth 1,000 words. Perhaps I'm only going to say 500 words on some of the pictures that are slides that are going to come up, but bear with us, and we'll just make the best of it, because we don't want to get pushed out of shape, bent out of shape. One of the best and most preferable ways to learn is by the examples and experiences of other people. Would you not agree? Other people, if we can learn from their mistakes or even from their successes, then that is a very powerful method. And that method is used throughout much of the scriptures, the reading of the history of both peoples and of persons as individuals. And doing that can be a shortcut to wisdom. I've got very few scriptures for you today, but I would hope to amplify the intention and the meaning of those scriptures with the two stories that I want to relate to you. But the first scripture is in Deuteronomy 14, verses 22 through 26. Looks like it's coming up fairly good from the front. I hope you'll be able to see from the back. If not, well, you might find a seat closer up, but it doesn't look like it, because we look like we got a pretty full house. Deuteronomy 14, beginning verse 22, reading from the New Living Translation. It says, "You must set aside a tithe of your crops, one-tenth of all the crops you harvest every year. Bring this tithe to the place the Lord your God chooses for his name to be honored, and to eat it there in his presence. This applies to your tithes of your grain, your new wine, your olive oil, the firstborn males of your flock and herds. Notice the purpose of this tithing is to teach you always to fear the Lord your God. To fear the Lord your God. Now, the place that the Lord your God chooses for his name to be honored might be a place a long way from home, such as when you go to the Feast of Tabernacles. Not everybody lives in San Diego County. A lot more people would like to than can, but it's not easy to be able to afford the cost of living in Southern California, but many people do make it here for the Feast of Tabernacles, and we're glad to have you. Verse 25, if so, you may sell, of course, the tithe and a portion of your crops and herds, and take that money to the place the Lord your God chooses. Now, very few of us are farmers or live in that agrarian mode and situation today, so we do have money that we have, and we don't need to change our money into other money. Money is money, and we're happy to have it to come and enjoy the Feast of Tabernacles. And verse 26 says, when you arrive, use the money to buy anything you want, an ox, a sheep, some wine or beer, and then feast there in the presence of the Lord your God and celebrate with your household. Now, in the greater context here of Deuteronomy 14, in a little before and after, as we're going to read, is referring in many cases to the Feast of Tabernacles, as I mentioned here. And we find that this tithe that's referenced is a second tithe. It's not the tithe that is used in that particular instance to support the tabernacle or the temple later on, but a second tithe. And to fear is to learn to love the Lord in learning to fear the Lord is what I'm going to title this message today. It is Learning to Fear the Lord, A Tale of Two Feasts. So fear does not always mean to be afraid. It means also to be in awe or in reverence and so forth. And that is what we think that is intended here for us to learn, to come here, not to learn to quake in our boots as we walk down the aisles, but learn to love the Lord and understand and have awe and reverence for Him. At the end of each 7 years, we notice in Deuteronomy 31, verses 9 through 13, once again, the New Living Translation. So Moses wrote down his law and gave it to the priests who carried the Ark of the Lord's covenant and to the leaders of Israel. And then Moses gave them this command. At the end of every seventh year, their year of release, during the Festival of Shelters, which is another it's a translation for Feast of Tabernacles, you must read this law to all the people of Israel. And when they assemble before the Lord your God in the place that He chooses, call them all together, men, women, and children, and the foreigners living in your towns. Why? So they may listen and learn to fear the Lord your God and carefully obey all of the terms of this law. Do this so that your children who have not known these laws will hear them and will learn learn to fear the Lord your God. How do we learn? Well, reading of the law is one way. And another, as I mentioned before, in studying the scriptures, is reading stories about God's involvement in people's lives. So this morning I want to share with you two personal Feast of Tabernacles, stories about myself. Not, and as you'll notice, not to elevate myself, but to share with you in lessons which God was teaching me to learn to fear the Lord. As I said, the message is entitled Learning to Fear the Lord, A Tale of Two Feasts. The first tale that I want to tell you and share with you is what I call the Feast of Faith. To get some background, we've got to go to 1973. How many people here are old enough to remember 1973? Quite a few. That's good. There's a lot of you out there that don't know much about 1973. It was a time of long hair on men, short skirts and no bras on women. It was an interesting time. Women wore makeup and mini skirts and short shorts and so forth. And even some people in cutting fashion, my next slide, some people enjoyed fashion like the feather suit that Dan Salcedo has on in this picture as he's practicing the piano. Probably for the Feast of Tabernacles, maybe not. Maybe not. We'll have to ask Dan about that later to see if it was if he was or not. Well, 1973 brings up many memories, but I want to share with you the first ministerial visit where the local pastor... Oops, that's a little too soon. Save that one. Yeah, stay on Elton for a moment. Or excuse me, Dan. He looks familiar, a little like Elton John, but, well, you get the point. Anyway, the pastor, local pastor and assistant came out to visit with us, as I'm sure they did with many of you. Came to our door. We opened the door. Their jaws dropped. You know, Jackie's short, blonde, bleached hair, makeup, short shorts. I've been out of the Navy for a year and a half and haven't seen a barber since. So we were not exactly what they were looking at as prime candidates to come to church. And so the questioning began, and we went through different things and so forth, and they asked us about just trying to figure out how far along we were and basically to figure out, let's prove that these people don't know anything about what they're talking about, and then they've just called us by mistake. But we went ahead and continued the discussion with him, and all along Jackie kept pressing and pressing, and it's like every time there was a break, it was, where's the church meet? Where's the church meet? Where's the church meet? Where's the church meet? They didn't want to tell us where the church met. And I don't think it was mostly me. I think it was her. But we talked on and explained how that we had been observing the Sabbath as best we could and as much as we understood for several months, probably more like a year and a half, keeping the Sabbath at home, and that we had read and studied booklets and articles and so forth, and that even on Passover we had taken off work and kept Passover at home. And the pastor asked us, well, how did you keep Passover? And I explained, well, we knew that we shouldn't work on Passover, so we took off work, and Jackie made a nice ham dinner. And I always think, and that's true, I'm not just kidding. I always think that there's some angel up there in heaven that really thinks that's funny. Yeah, that's funny. But we shared that, and so by the time we got to the point where I figured we're having difficulty convincing them of our sincerity, let's put it that way, or for them buying it. And so I went and got a stack of booklets about this high out of the bedroom and brought it back into the living room and showed them. And finally they let us know where the church was. And a couple of weeks later, we came into the church, and as we walked in, well, Jackie, of course, had prepared nicely, put on her best makeup, 1973, remember? Bought a brand new mini skirt to wear to church. Got to look nice. I didn't have a haircut. And we walked in, and all heads, it seemed, turned to us. What are they doing here? They must be lost. And Jackie thought she was lost too. She said, I think we've walked into the dark ages. A couple of months later, that was in June of 1973. And so a couple months later, as the Feast of Tabernacles began to come closer, we began to hear some oblique references to a feast, people going here or there, and the Feast of Tabernacles and so forth, and we really didn't know about it, and hadn't heard about it, hadn't figured it out, and didn't realize that that there was such a thing as a second tithe. We'd already been paying tithes, but didn't realize that, and with that knowledge went away my flying lessons. I wouldn't have been a good pilot anyway. But the Feast of Tabernacles we didn't learn about until just a couple of months before. And it was difficult to figure out on paper how we could afford to go to the feast. We both worked, which was good. We had a few hundred dollars in savings, which we figured we could put together and get by for probably the bulk of the feast if we went to Tucson, which we ended up going there for 17 years in a row. That's not a record. Compliment whoever went more than that, but we always enjoyed Tucson and had a great time there. But I had just started a new job. I've been about 2 months on the job, and I had no accrued paid vacation to go on, so we were frankly stretching ourselves considerably to go to the feast. And we went on faith, and the place that we found to stay, this is where this there it is. I don't think they kept this on the church-approved list, these shacks that we had available to us. But you notice the gentleman over on the left side of the picture there carrying the rifle or the shotgun. I think that's Wayne Dunlap. He's going by to make sure that we're not complaining about the good accommodations that we had. We enjoyed our time there and got to eat mostly fast food, found one of our favorite places, was the hot dog shack. And we got by that first Feast of Tabernacles. We got by because of the inspiring messages that we heard, the fellowship with the people there. It wasn't a great physical feast for us, but when we got home, to our surprise as well, I got paid full vacation pay for the time that I was gone. And that has not been the only occurrence when that's happened. As I was preparing this, I was thinking back. I've changed jobs over the last 40 odd years, more times than I need to tell you. But the ones that have been closest to the feast, where I started a new job a month or two before, I always found when I got back from the feast that my paycheck was full. And God had blessed me very much that way. So in this case, in this first tale of a feast, we went on faith and learned that obedience and acting on faith were ways to learn to have awe and reverence for God, because He took care of us. And maybe some of you are here on faith, not knowing, am I going to be able to stay for the whole feast? Should I have even come? Will the bills get paid? There are all kinds of questions and challenges that come up to us in these kind of situations. But I wanted to share this with you, because the next year, we faithfully saved festival tithe all year, of course, and experienced a wonderful Feast of Tabernacles in Tucson, and saw some of the better places to stay and better restaurants to eat at, and had a good time. But obedience and faith equals fear in God. Deuteronomy 14, 22, 23, we read before, but I want to reemphasize. You must set aside a tithe of your crops, one-tenth of all the crops you harvest each year. Bring this tithe to the place the Lord your God chooses for His name to be honored, and eat it there in His presence. This applies to the tithes of your tithes of grain, new wine, oil, olive oil, and the firstborn males of your flock and herds. The purpose of this tithing, this second tithing, this festival tithing, is to teach you always to fear, or to be in awe and worship highlighting an understanding of God, and to fear the Lord our God. The second tale I want to tell you, the feast tale of 1977. Now, probably not many more of you remember 1997 than 93, but that's understandable. But it was, give you some background here. We had become friends as we had come to church, of course, and we're friendly and outgoing people, and had become very good friends with Bob and Sheila Gardenhire. I don't know if you know Bob and Sheila, but they've been around longer than us. We were very good friends. I had no hobbies at that time, other than playing the guitar for friends and grins, as I said. Not good enough to really do anything with it and enjoy it. But I learned to play tennis. Bob taught me how to play tennis. And we would go out and play tennis regularly. For the next 3 or 4 years, we played nearly every Sunday for 4 or 5 hours in the morning. We'd get there on the court before sun up, and sometimes have to squeegee the dew off of the courts to play. And we did that, and then every once in a while we'd throw in an opportunity after work during the week to do that. Well, over the course of time, this is a picture of, it's difficult to see, but on the right, the picture on the right is me serving an ace and Bob whiffing it on the other side. Just totally missed the ace. We do that once in a while. Bob and I got to be where we were pretty even, but to be honest with you, most of the time he was a little better than me. But we played tennis, and Bob came up with this power drink. Power drink. It would give us energy and stamina and high protein. And we started out with milk, and then added powdered tiger's milk, and then put some honey in it. And then a la Rocky Balboa, you know, raw eggs. How many, Bob? Just one? I'm having two. Two eggs in mine. Maybe he's having two. I'm having three. Drink it down and go play tennis. We were big into tennis. I hope you're getting the point. At about that time, Mario Segli, some of you, he's your pastor at Garden Grove. Here's something he may not have shared with you, but he was sent down temporarily to San Diego as an assistant pastor, waiting to get his visa and get clearance to go down to Chile to pastor down there. Well, Mario loved tennis too. I think he still does. Mario was very competitive, very competitive. So he educated me, and I learned about the special Sabbath rules regarding sunset and tennis. There are special rules. You probably didn't know about them. If you're playing tennis with Mario, and you're ahead, and the sun's, you know, sunsetting, it's a different rule than if he's ahead and the sun's setting. If he's ahead, set's over, and he gets victory. If he's behind, then you can play till the set is finished to give him a chance to catch up and get ahead and maybe win. I'm not kidding you. This is a long time ago. Mario has grown a lot since then. I don't know if he plays tennis any better than he did then or not, but that was a special rule that he shared with us, and I know he played that card on Bob a number of times as well. So we got pretty good at tennis, and it kind of became part of our way of life. You know, every weekend we were out playing tennis. And I'm pretty sure it was 1977. That's my story, so I'm picking the year. The Tucson Festival had a all-men's tennis tournament. Well, I got in my mind, I'm going to go win that tournament. Why was I going to the feast? To win that tournament. I planned on winning. I bought a new graphite racket. I bought new shoes. I bought new shirts, new shorts. I spared no expense. We rented a casita at Margaret Court's racket club where the tournament was going to be held so that we could play, and Bob did too. I'm not criticizing Bob on this because he was basically following my lead. I begged him to come early. Let's go a couple of days ahead. We can go out and we can play tennis a couple of days ahead, get acclimated to the temperature, the heat. Maybe we can get in a set or a couple of games or something before we go to church in the morning on the regular days of the feast. And so we went and did that and headed off to Tucson. Was my mind on going to the feast to learn to fear God? No. My mind was focused on playing in and winning that tennis tournament. So we traveled to Tucson, and in those days we would leave about 2 o'clock in the morning. The trip to Tucson was about, well, depends, some of you took 8 hours, I took about 4 hours and 45 minutes. But we get out across the desert in the night, in the early morning hours, where there are few highway patrol and very little traffic to deal with, a lot less heat and so forth. Well, you go through going to Tucson, and you get to Yuma from San Diego, and it's like, that's not that far. I don't need to stop and fill up with gas in Yuma. I can make it till the next. I can go more. It'll cut into my elapsed time if I stop now and do that. So I waited and kept on going until I ran out of gas. 1977, no cell phones, no way to get hold of AAA, tell them to come out and help me. Just your choices are to get out and walk or wait. And I figured waiting was probably futile, so I began to get ready to walk, and of course Jackie and our dog both sitting there shaking their heads at me. Why didn't you just stop? Why didn't you just get gas? Anybody ever heard that from your wife? It's a favorite line to use in that kind of situation. So I got out and started walking along the shoulder of the highway and didn't get more than maybe 50 yards in front of the car and stepped off on the shoulder with a drop off of about 6 inches, half my foot, right ankle. Oh, sprained it so bad, it instantly swelled up like a toad. I could hardly walk and hobble back to the car. So what was our option then was to wait. Fortunately, a highway patrol officer came along, had some gas, gave us a little gas so I could get to that next station that I thought I could get to without having to borrow gas from somebody else. But so we got the gas, got back in the car and drove to Tucson, no more troubles, no problems. But with this sprained ankle, I wrapped it, I iced it, I got anointed for it. I could still barely walk. But what was on my mind? Playing in that tennis tournament. Just playing in the tennis. How was I gonna do that? Well, it was a couple of days or a few days before we got to the time for the tournament. And so I was bound and determined that I was going to play in that tournament and prayed for miraculous healing of my ankle. The day of the tournament, it was foursomes. And as best I recall, it's been a while since I've played tennis now, and everything gets foggy. But we would play doubles, and the winning doubles pair moved up a court, and the loser stayed on the bottom court. And we drew numbers for what court we started on and where the rotation would take. And I drew the lowest court that there was. There were 12 courts or 10 courts. I don't remember exactly right now. But I was that. But normally that wouldn't matter because you win, you move up, and no problem. I still could take that tournament and take that trophy home with me. I got on the court. My foursome was made up of myself, a non-member woman who had come to the feast with her husband, and she wanted to play in the men's tournament. And the organizer of the tournament let her, and she was on my court. A 12-year-old boy. And those of you from Garden Grove, I think, if I remember correctly, it's Bob Schmidt's boy. I don't remember. His name David? Is it? I'm pretty sure that that's who was on there, a 12-year-old boy. But he played well enough. And the fourth was a one-armed man. I'm playing with an ankle, thinking I might be able to get by. I'm on a court with a woman, a 12-year-old boy, and a one-armed man. I'm not kidding. And I don't think I won a game. Not a game. As I recall, my mentor, Mr. Gardenhire, won the tournament. He can thank my busted ankle. It wasn't broken, it was sprained. It was a very bad sprain. It took about 3 years before I could really walk on it securely. Without having an ace bandage or something like that. But it was not the reason that I went to keep the feast in Tucson. Maybe some of you have come to the feast with some other idea, some other thing that's more important than spending time with God and with His people. I hope that's not the case, but I suspect that I'm not the only one that's ever fallen into that kind of a trap. I hope I'm the only one that's ever fallen off the side of the road that way and hurt your ankle. But nevertheless, learning from the experiences of others, it's just one of the best ways and least painful ways of learning. And it's avoiding the pitfalls of life by learning from the lessons of others. I share my stories today with you while humorous, humiliating, humble at least, would you say? I've told you some stuff I didn't have to tell you about me. Probably been better if I hadn't. But I don't worry about those sort of things anymore. It's because it's one of the best ways to learn to fear the Lord at the Feast of Tabernacles. And I do hope that this tale of two feasts will be a lesson and a blessing to each of you regarding faith and obedience and keeping God first in your life. Deuteronomy 31:13, remember we read, said, "Do this so that your children who have not known these laws will hear them and will learn to fear the Lord your God." Share your stories. Share your tales. Don't be afraid when you're not the hero, but maybe you're the zero of the tale, but to share it with your friends, your family, and God bless you all.